hope you enjoyed my piano playing. The only way to get back there is to blow a transition and be able to just get back there. So, anyway, hey, we want to say happy Mother's Day to you, and we're just glad you're here. And, I mean, God's ordered up some good weather this weekend for us, hasn't he? I think this rain's going to get out of here today for you moms, and enjoy another great day. And I just received this recently from a friend. Some school-age kids were asked some questions about their moms. And I listened to some of their answers. And why did God make moms? One kid said, well, she's the only one who knows where the scotch tape is. Well, why did God give you your mom and not another mom? And one kid answered, well, God knew she likes me a lot more than other people's moms like me right now, you know? Question was, what ingredients are moms made of? God makes mothers out of clouds and angel hair and everything nice in the world, and then adds one dab of mean. The question was asked, what kind of little girl was your mom? One girl answered, well, they say she used to be nice. You know? Is there anything perfect about your mom? One little boy said, on the inside, she's already perfect. Outside, I think she's had some kind of plastic surgery. Don't you love the honesty there? Last question is, if you could change one thing about your mom, what would it be? And one little girl said, I'd make my mom smarter. Then she would know it was my sister who did it and not me. All right? I mean, I love the honesty of little kids. The reality is, if those kids were asked these questions 20 years down the road, they would answer those differently. Because the reality is that moms, you change. And the role of motherhood changes. And we thought today it'd just be great to take a look at the stages of motherhood and some of the changes that you go through as moms. And so we're going to have moms talk to you moms today. And one of the most overlooked stages, I believe, and one we struggle with every year, year after year at Mother's Day, is what I just call the stage of loss. And it's that stage where we know that the year after year, there are some of you sitting in here who in your lifetime or just recently have had a doctor say to you, you know what, you will never get pregnant naturally. Or you're sitting in here and recently you've had your third or fourth miscarriage and you're wondering, God, what in the world is going on? Will I ever get the desire of my heart? Or maybe you're sitting here single and you're thinking, man, will I ever get married and have kids? Friends, this is a tough stage, full of a lot of pain. And so we just wanted to speak into that this morning. Because that is a stage of motherhood. And our own April Coutant has graciously offered to share her story. How she's kind of navigated through that stage of loss. And her and Al are going to share their story. And the word that we really would want to just hopefully have you take home out of this stage today is the word hope. So listen as April shares her story.
Well, Al and I had been married about 10 years. And because we were married very young, we waited 10 years. And when we decided it was time to have children, we found out that we could not have children. The process of finding out that we couldn't have children was really painful. You go through all the tests, you try all the different methods, and then you get your period. And then another month goes by. And the agony of that happening month after month is so painful and depressing. And I know that depression was something that I had to deal with, and there's no quick fix. There's no little words you can tell someone that makes it all better. It really is a process that you have to go through. And I depended on God, and he brought me through it. He didn't take away my depression instantly because pain is pain, and reality was reality. And sometimes the doctors aren't all that, their bedside manner isn't all that good when they're telling you, well, your chances of having a child, it would be like dropping a marble in the middle of the floor and it hitting that, out of a million marbles, hitting that marble way over. I mean, it was just, for me, the analogy was really cruel. So there is a lot of pain you go through in that process. I never really struggled like maybe some women do with why me, God, and, you know, Why wouldn't you make me so that I could have children? I because I really didn't want to go down that path, I kept trying to choose a more positive, emotional choice and just trusting him. And so I never really doubted God's character and that he wanted the best for me. I do remember feeling that there's always a choice as to which way I'm going to react emotionally and my trust and everything. I can always get bitter or I can always point towards God in my heart, you know. And I didn't want to be bitter. It was very disappointing that I would never have a child that would have my musical abilities, you know. That dream is, you know, is kind of sad for me to think, what would we have had a little saxophone player or a little piano player? You know, what would that have been like? Fortunately, we're at a stage in our faith where we did depend on God. We weren't, and we made a choice to not go down that bitter road. But it was still hard emotionally. I just remember the thing is, I just kept trying to make the right choice to trust God, and the right choice to, even through my emotion, even through my sadness and my loss, to know that I'm in God's hands and He has a plan for us and our family. And that really is what sustained me. So then we had to decide, do we want to be a couple with no children, or do we want to adopt? Or we just wanted whatever God wanted. We didn't want to not do what He wanted. So there were a lot of options. We could have adopted in the United States. But at that time, we lived near Detroit, and the wait for an infant was about 5 years. And that was, we thought we'd be way too set in our marriage if we waited 5 years. So we started looking into foreign adoptions. And when I grew up, I had like 5 Japanese exchange students live with us. So I was really in love with anyone from another country. And so I started looking into foreign adoptions. And at that time, the Korean children were the most readily, the process was really good with the Korean children for adoption. So I started writing and getting the information, and I got really excited about it. And however, Al wasn't quite as excited at the time. So I had a dilemma. Do I push my husband, or do I pray and ask God to do the work? So that was hard, but I decided to not push, because I wanted God's will, and I would never know if it was God's will if I pushed my husband into making that decision. So he still said, no, I'm just not comfortable with a foreign adoption. So I let that vision go. It was kind of what you'd call a death of a vision for having a family of my own.
I think I went through the process where we were physically going through some of the tests and stuff, trying to figure out exactly from a human perspective, why isn't this working? But then you get to a point where you say, all right, I'm not going to push this any farther, even if medical science allows you to. So you said, all right, I'm going to stop that medical process. But then for me, it was saying, all right, now God, you're going to have to show me that this step is right for us somehow. Didn't have an idea on how He might do that. And in my case, it was traveling down to Brazil and seeing this family with adopted girls, which was totally unexpected to me, and watching that in action. And when I came back off the plane, I said to April, I think we need to adopt. So God chose that particular way of answering that in my life. Somebody else, it would be different. But I think it just kind of illustrates the idea that we have different paths on how we come to a realization that taking some step, getting married, having kids, whatever the process is, changing jobs or anything, what's the right thing for me? And how do I know this is something that God feels is correct for us at this point in time?
So when he came back from Brazil and he got off the airport and got in the car, he turned to me and said, oh, I think we should adopt. And I just went, whoa! I was so excited because it was a gift from God. It was so obvious that God had worked. And, you know, when God's working, you can just be fully embracing that and just be so thankful to Him for it. With Abby, our first daughter, we found out about her on the first day of the Christmas season. So she was my Christmas present. And our second daughter, we found out that we were getting, was on Valentine's Day. She was my Valentine's Day person. So that was really special to me. But with Abby, the big metal stork in the sky delivered her to us via an escort. And she came into the airport in Minneapolis, and she was the last baby off the plane. And, oh, the joy of seeing her for the first time was just incredible. And the bonding that happened so quickly was amazing to me. I mean, it's an adoption in the heart. That just, it's a heart connection that God puts there. So it's really special. Because of the daughters I now have, the why me makes a lot of sense. I've got these two beautiful girls I just love, that who I even forget are adopted. Sometimes we're sitting in a restaurant and they're sitting across from us, and the waiter or waitress will come and they'll, is this for two checks or one? And I'm thinking, don't you know it's our daughters? You know, and then I forget, oh yeah, they don't look like us, do they? So, yeah, I get a lot of joy. Yeah, the joy has taken the place of the grief. The hole, it's filled the hole. I know that our daughters God had designed for us, that he wanted us to have those two children in our family. So that, what he gave back, made up for what he took away. Well, now my daughters are adults. They're 24 and 29, and they're living in Brooklyn, New York, and they're sharing an apartment, which I am amazed that they're doing, because I thought that would never happen. It's a relief for me as a mom, though, that they're together in Brooklyn, New York. It's kind of hard. I don't get to see them that often, maybe once or twice a year, so that's an adjustment. But I'm very blessed that they're doing so well and that we have a great relationship.
Yeah, I just love to just pray for all you moms who are in this stage right now. Would you just bow your heads with me? Father, we just come to you, and God, that why question is a hard one. Sometimes you let us in a little bit on that, and other times you don't. And for all the women who are sitting even here today, who have either been in this stage or are in this stage, I would just ask, Holy Spirit, that you would just, you'd bring peace and comfort and just send it to the depths of their soul and heart where the pain resides most high. And I would also pray just your wisdom for a husband and wife as they navigate this season and some of the options that maybe they pursue. Just ask you just bring them onto the same page during this time. And Jesus, I'm reminded as you prayed in the garden before you went to the cross, you even asked the Father, you said, if it's possible, would you just take this thing away from me? Yet, not my will, but your will be done. And so, God, we're just going to ask even today that you would just do the miraculous. That you would give the desires of the hearts today in this area. And yet we pray not our will, but your will be done. And God, would you just put your hand of blessing and favor on those that are in this stage today, we pray. In your name, amen. Well, this next stage of motherhood, the 0 birth to 12 stage, is demanding, to say the least. And I know my wife and I are in the middle of it, and you know you're in it if your feet stick to the floor with grape jelly and you really don't care anymore about it. Or if your husband calls you and says, hey, thanks again for cutting my sandwich into cute little dinosaur pieces. That was real nice. And you don't have to look very far in this church to know that many of you are in it. If you look downstairs in Discovery Land this morning, we know quite a few of us are in this stage. And I remember the time when we got Brianna, our firstborn. And it wasn't too long after that I realized that, you know, parenting was going to expose my weaknesses like never before. And it was going to challenge my self-understanding, and it was going to pack my schedule. And so in this stage, the word that we have for you today, moms, is simply help. And so we want to just invite Chris Hines, who has led our Moms and More experience this past year for mothers with preschoolers, to join us and kind of share her journey. So would you welcome Chris this morning? Chris, thanks for joining us this morning. And, you know, people get married, and husband and wife seem to go to work together, and then they decide to have kids, and, you know, they get pregnant, have a kid, and mom either stays at home now, or she's at home for, you know, the first 8 weeks or 12 weeks, and that's a big transition, because it seems like now that for you as a mom, everybody needs you. Your husband needs you still. This little baby needs you. I mean, other people need you. How do you take care of your needs? Well, it seems like everybody in the world wants you to meet their needs.
Well, that's difficult. I had a friend tell me just recently that before you have children, you have a full-time job, and then you add another full-time job when you have a child. So that's hard to manage, and I really didn't do a very good job the first few years managing that. I was a lunatic. I was sleep deprived and had a little boy, a very, very wild little boy with ADD. And he kept me busy by himself. And then I added a baby to the mix with acid reflux. So she was up all night. And I was trying to keep it together and, you know, thought that if I asked for help, that was like a sense of failure in some sense. So I really didn't do a very good job keeping it together. And my marriage suffered. I suffered because I put myself and my husband last. So,
one of the overlooked feelings that moms go through a lot of times is guilt. Did you experience any of that, and how do you?
Definitely, navigate? Definitely. Guilt's a big factor in motherhood, anyway, because you know we have societal pressures put on us to be this super mom and have this perfect house and this pristine children, and they're supposed to be really well behaved and. I can't tell you how many times I've carried my son out of McDonald's on football hold, screaming and kicking with a baby in tow. You know, not very pristine. But for us, the guilt was compounded a little bit because we had issues having children. We had, I've had 5 miscarriages and a little boy that was stillborn. So, you know, I thought, oh my goodness, this is what we've been waiting for. And we had our son, and then it, you know, wasn't always so joyful because you're so exhausted all the time. So, you know, the disciplining, you feel guilty for disciplining or over-disciplining and yelling and spanking and all the discipline issues. And after I'd put them to bed and they'd be so angelic, you know, I'd lay there looking at them thinking, wow, I was mean to you today. You know, I would not want me for a mom. And, you know, then you lay in bed and you're, please, Lord, please give me patience to be nicer tomorrow. And then by 8 a.m., the milk is all over the floor, cereal's all over the place, and mean mommy is back. So it's difficult. The guilt's a big factor.
And that guilt's compounded, I think, by all the plates that it seems like, you know, moms have to keep spinning. And just the marriage plate or the parent plate mm-hmm. or anything. And then you throw in anything else that's in your life. Those are a lot of plates to keep spinning. And I think the tension and the challenge in this stage, and more I see couples who are getting to the end of this stage, and they're looking at each other going, I'm not sure I really want to stay in this anymore. I'm not sure I love you anymore, because really from day one, when baby came home from the hospital, their home has been child-centered and the marriage has gone on the back burner. I mean, how have you navigated that tension between keeping your home marriage-centered versus child-centered?
Well, the first 3 years that we had children, it was kid-centered and completely hyper-kid-centered. My husband and I just kind of went our separate ways. He brought home the paycheck, and I took care of the house, sort of, and the kids. And we didn't make it 15 years. We made it 3 years, and we found ourselves in front of attorneys ready to be done. You know, not only did we not love each other anymore, I didn't even like him anymore. And my attorney said to me, he said, this is a very stressful time in a marriage. Have you guys been to marriage counseling? And I looked at him and thought, I don't need marriage counseling. He may need marriage counseling, but I don't need any marriage counseling. But I feel like God used him to talk to me, because both of us went home and decided we were going to give this another go. We found a wonderful Christian marriage counselor who just kind of explained to us that, you know, the kids, yes, they have needs that need to be met, but we have to keep our marriage forefront and plan things to do intentionally. It isn't going to be spontaneous anymore. Nothing is spontaneous except for the children. He gave us some Christian books to read about the 5 love languages, and we kind of learned how to talk to each other in a way that the other person could receive. So it was really, really instrumental for us.
Now, you know, when's the last time you met a lawyer who said, you know what,
before you come back to see me, I want you to go to marriage counseling. That's the kind of lawyers we need out there these days, isn't it? Well, what kind of help does a mom need during this stage? I mean, whether you're a single mom today, whether you're a married mom, I mean, what kind of help does a mom need during this stage most?
Moms need a lot of help. Unfortunately, a lot of moms are afraid to ask for help, like I was. I learned that when I joined Moms and More here at Northwoods and talked to a bunch of other moms and thought, oh, okay, we're all in the same boat. We all have guilt. We all have issues. We're all struggling to keep it all together. But for me, it was getting connected with other moms and reading some, you know, great Christian parenting books and parenting books on marriage, you know, trying to keep the parents and the marriage together. And I also got back into my Bible. And there are some really great verses in here that keep me going. So I really had to get back connected to the Word and keep that hidden in my heart to remind me that I'm not alone in this. You know, I have other people here, but I'm not alone.
Has there been a verse that's really helped you?
Yes. I have a lot of verses written in the back of my Bible. I have a mom Bible. I highly recommend that to you moms. It has subjects in the back that relate to motherhood and devotions in here that really relate to motherhood of all ages. And I have an attitude issue. I tend to be a little controlling. So I like things a certain way, and kids don't really fit into that very well. So that tends to get my, you know, my juices flowing a little bit. So I have some attitude verses written back here as a check for me when I'm having a day that I need to look in there. But there's one verse that's like a life verse for me, and it's Philippians 4, verse 13, that says, I can do everything through him who gives me strength. And what that says to me is that he has given me everything I have. He has given to me. My husband was given to me by him, and my kids were major, you know, blessings given to me by him. And that they're gifts that I've been given, and if I rely on him, I can do it. Just, you know, I just need to rely on him more instead of thinking that I can do it all by myself, which I've struggled with.
Well, you have a chance to encourage moms who are in this stage right now. What's one or two things you would just tell them this morning?
The first thing I'd say is breathe. You will have time when your kids are in school. If you're a full-time mom or a working mom, you will have a little more time to get all those little things done that you're not getting done when your kids are in school. I have a first grader and one that's going to be in kindergarten in the fall, and I've been home, very blessed to be home full-time with them, and it's really hitting me that my major instrumental time where I can put my hands on them is just about done. You know, it's going to move into a different transition. So that's really hitting me. But my number one thing I would also say is get connected. You have to get connected to other moms so that you can have a support network and you can pray together and share together and we laugh together. I have a really great group of moms in my mom's group at Moms and More. And we just have really connected. We're going to be lifelong friends that, you know, we can watch our kids grow up together. And it's just great to know that if I'm having a really bad day, which we have a lot, you know, we can call each other and say, okay, you know, keep me accountable here. And we keep each other accountable in our marriages and with shopping issues and, you know, all kinds of things that moms sort of tend to go to. And another thing that you really need to hide God's word in your heart, pick a verse, pick two verses, put it up on your mirror, do something that reminds you what this is all about. You know, your laundry, your counters, all those kinds of things will still be there. But your kids grow up so fast, and this is such a short little time. And, you know, think about it. Is this really going to matter in 5 years, the things you're getting all irritated about?
Yeah. That's some great stuff. And moms, for those of you who are in this stage, we just want to say you are not crazy. And you might think so as we take a look in the life of a day of the Hines family on this video. Take a look. Well, next to the terrible twos, this stage from 13 to 22 probably elicits about as much fear as any in us as parents, as moms, as dads. And for this is the stage where our kids are metamorphosing into adults. And it brings with it a new reality that the relationships that we have with our kids are changing. And the key word really for this stage is identity. And some of the changes that we go through as moms and in our own identity with our kids. And technically, we're always going to be mom to our kids, aren't we? And yet sometimes during the stage, we don't know if we're mom, a friend, or the enemy at times, right, with our kids. And so knowing that my daughter is 3 years away from beginning this stage, which is hard to believe, I've always tried to get to know and learn and observe from people. And these next three ladies who are going to share with us are people who I have already been learning from. And so I want you to welcome Tanya and Rachel Nielsen and Candace Wine. Ladies, thanks for joining us, and let's just get right into it. You know, during this stage, as kids are getting more independent and wanting more and more freedom, the reality is that a role of a mom kind of begins to change. Candace, what are some of those changes that you're going through as a mom during this stage?
Letting go. My son, who is now married, it's very hard to just back away and wait and sit in the wings, sort of, and let him approach me. It's in my nature to be a nurturer, a caregiver, and to rescue, and so I have to back away from those feelings that I have this battle inside of me, and Kevin's very good about helping me process those feelings and emotions that I'm having.
And that tension is very real, and I think as parents, it's always How much freedom do we give our kids? How much is too much? How much is too little? I mean, how have you navigated that tension?
Well, hopefully I've been letting the rope out. Sometimes I've done better at that than other times. A little bit by little bit. And eventually, of course, when they get married, you're completely letting go. But as you do that, you kind of see how much you need to let it out, how much you need to rein it in, kind of balancing those out. It's different.
Tanya, how about you?
Well, I think you have to keep in mind that the whole freedom issue is tied to trying to teach your kids to make wise decisions when they're away from you. And that looks different for different kids. Your kids are going to be on different timetables. Your household is going to be on a different timetable than, say, your neighbors or your relatives. And you have to handle that, you know, based on what's appropriate for each kid. The other thing that my husband and I have tried to do is think ahead to that next step. You know, this is what freedom they're looking at wanting now, but what about 2 years? And are we empowering or are we holding back? What's appropriate for that kid at that time?
And sometimes it's hard for kids in the same household to understand, you know, why my brother gets freedom or my sister gets freedom and I don't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Rachel, here you are at 22. You're at the end of this stage, and you can look back over the last 9 or 10 years, and you can really speak to those kids in here who are 13, 14 years old about this whole process of freedom. I mean, how did that go for you as you look back?
It's crazy how much my feelings on that process and even my perspective have changed over whatever the last 9 or 10 years. Because I can remember being 13, 14, even 15, and I didn't care that my parents were trying to teach me to make wise choices and that they were trying to let the rope out a little bit at a time and make sure that I could make, you know, good decisions, but that I didn't fall on my face. I didn't care about any of that. I just wanted freedom and independence, and I wanted it all immediately. But then, even though those few years probably felt like a really, really long time to my parents, not too long after that, like 16, 17, 18, and more with each passing year since then, I started to see what they were doing in those things. And I started to see that the way that I make decisions are a result of the things that they did. And I began to appreciate that. And now I'm even able to thank them for that.
You know, I was a youth pastor for about 10 years working with high school kids, and year after year I would just see families battling this tension. And it seemed like there were families who navigated it well and those families that didn't navigate it so well. And one of the characteristics that families who navigated well seemed to have was this, that they kept their hearts open to one another. It didn't matter if they didn't agree with each other. It didn't matter, you know, if the kids thought these are the stupidest rules I've ever heard of. But they kept their hearts open towards each other. And, you know, as I've observed your families, you seem to have done a good job of that. And how do you do that? How do you keep, you know, a mom's heart, a dad's heart open towards the kids and vice versa? What are some of the things you found to be helpful?
One thing that was really on my heart is I wanted my kids to know how I felt about them and about the things I was telling them. I wanted them to know what I thought, why I thought it, what progress were we wanting and what goals were we trying to achieve. And this is why I was saying what I was saying. And the other thing was I asked lots and lots of questions. I was constantly asking questions of them and being involved in their life. Now, once they got married, then I stopped asking the probing questions.
That's probably a good thing. Yeah,
yeah, and yeah. Sat back.
Well, Tanya, what have you found to be helpful?
I think, you know, you want to be your children's encourager. You want to pour value into those kids. You want to tell them how very dear they are. You want to express your love to them. And another biggie is you want to be available. And that availability changes over the years. You have to be flexible. And one of the things, and this is going out free to all you people in the audience here today, when your kids are like 12 to 15, 16, and you feel like you are in the car all the time, what you want to do is you want to be the driver, okay? Something happens when you're driving a van full of kids, and you become invisible, and all those kids are back there talking, and you are learning a lot. So you want to be available all through the years. And then what we've tried to do as the kids have gotten older is, and you want to do this in a healthy, appropriate way, you guys. You don't want to be sick and dependent here, but you want to... If we found out that our kids were going to be home and we didn't have major plans, we would just intentionally stay home. You know, there is so much to be said for that unstructured downtime, just hanging out, just being together at home. And some really great relational things happen in that relaxed time.
Is consistency important during the season?
Absolutely.
And sometimes, you know, during this season, you know, parents just want to say, okay, forget it. You know, I'm just tired. I don't want to deal with this, right? Mm-hmm. And yet the season goes very quick, doesn't it?
Yes.
As you both know, you've married off a son. You have a daughter that's engaged. And Tanya and Rachel, 4 weeks from yesterday, we're going to be doing your wedding together. And so you are right in the thick of this season. And there's probably some moms out here that might be, you know, watching one of their sons or daughters getting married even this summer. I mean, does anybody prepare you for those moments? And I mean, what are some of the things going on inside of you as a mom during, as you're saying, okay, I'm giving my daughter son away here?
I thought I'd be prepared, and I thought I knew what would happen. And then when it did, I wasn't. I just had this very sense of loss, of grieving. I realized... It would just hit me all of a sudden. This is going to be the last time we're going to have a Christmas with just our family. It's the last time when he comes home from school that it will be just him and our family. There's going to be another person coming in the door with him. Just lots and lots of changes and a sense of loss. But that's okay to have that sense of loss and to remember those wonderful things. And it's time to move on to new chapters.
Tanya, how you're right in the middle of it. What have you been processing?
Tim, you keep talking about that, Tim. Yeah.
Just want to make sure you're prepared 4 weeks from today.
I, like Candace, was not prepared for the flood of emotions. I thought I was prepared. I had read books about it. I had spoken with some women about this time of life. But I really felt blindsided by the just intensity of the emotion. And I'm thankful for that in some ways because it's a reflection of how tight-knit our family is. But it is very strange because everything that happens, my lens is looking at it as this is the last. This is the last family vacation, just us. This is the last Christmas morning.
And that's really true because that's what it's been up till now. And at the same time, I kind of have this weird mix of emotions because... For the last 22 years, that's what it has been, and that's all I've known. But where this lens sees it more is this is the last time for all of these things. My lens simultaneously is that, wow, I am so close to my family, and I love my family so much. And yes, there's all this stuff changing. I see everything as this is the first time for everything new. And I'm looking forward so much to the first Christmas with my husband and our first house and all of these things. just as this chapter kind of changes for all of us together as a family.
And that's such a great point, you know, for us to understand. I know we joke together when we're preparing for this that the closer you are, the harder it is. So we thought we'd give you the principle. If you really wanted this to be easy when you let your son or daughter get married, don't be close to them, okay? And just re-engage, like, down the road at some point, you know? You have a chance to speak to moms who are in this stage right now. What's one thing you would just say to encourage them today?
Cultivate. For me, it was cultivate my relationship with the Lord. There's many, many times when I've gone to the Lord in prayer, and he has shown me what to do or shown me what is happening and why I'm feeling what I'm feeling and what the next step is, and persevere.
Yeah, that's a good word. Tanya, how about you?
I think I would say, you know, focus on your children's hearts. You know, you want, what we're all after is fantastic long-term relationships. And just pray for that. Keep that up front in your mind. And be willing to embrace the next chapter. You know, that's where we are. We're ready to move forward and embrace that next chapter.
Yeah. Well, our team has a fun medley that I think captures the heart of this season. Listen as they sing. It's good, huh? Well, it's amazing to me how smart my parents get every year I get older. Does that happen to any of you guys out there? You know? And, you know, it's not very often that you get to sit down with a mom and a daughter who are well into their journey as in that relationship, and the daughter who's become a mom. And we have a very special treat. And the first question, I'll give you a little, it's kind of a little trick question for you to figure out who is the mom today. And so I want you to welcome Millie Shattuck and her daughter, Diana Traver. Ladies, thanks for joining us today. And, you know, in this stage of full-blown adulthood, being down the road, the word that really captures this is perspective. And I know that you can give us some of that today. And so, Diana, I just want to ask you to start off with, when you think about your mom, what are some of the things that you learned from her that you said, yes, I am going to take this into my life?
Well, the first thing that she taught us that not to be lazy. That things wasn't handed to us on a silver platter. We had to work for them, and we appreciated them more. And also to respect other people and their property. And she told us if we wasn't good when we went over somebody's house, that we probably wasn't going to be invited back. And then, and we respect other people, and also that we were all equal. It didn't matter what you had. We're all equal in the eyes of God. And that was really important, and to honor our parents. And also she said that honesty and trustworthy was important, that if somebody gave you too much money, you went and took it back to them. And I have got a nickel one time, took it back. And at that time, it was important to us, that nickel was. And she said, don't mistreat animals. We always had lots of animals, and she said, take care of your animals. And another thing she said, not to be gullible, and I was really gullible. I remember she told me one time, she said that she found me in a cabbage patch, and my mother, everything she said was gospel, so I believed her. But later on in life, I got to thinking about it, and I thought, well, she and I look so much alike that there's either she is found in a cabbage patch or there's no way I could have been in that cabbage patch.
That's so good. Well, what are some of the things you said, there is no way I'm going to be like my mom in this way?
Well, we had to wax these hardwood floors and take up all the wax and clean them and put it back on. And so I decided I never wanted hardwood floors. And then also we had this little peach tree in the back of our yard. And if you misbehaved, well, we had to go out and pick our own switches off of that peach tree. And if we picked one that was too small, we had to go back and get another one. And my brother and I often thought about burning that peach tree.
That's so good.
And my mom was just a little bit bossy. And I said I wasn't going to be, but I was a little bit bossy like she was.
Oh, that's good. Well, Millie, you are 65 years into this mothering thing, and we won't even talk about Diana's age this morning. But, you know, you have this great perspective right now. To look back at some of the stages we've been talking about and think, you know,
I used to think that was important when I was in the midst of it, but as I think about it now, that really wasn't that important. What are some of the things that you can think about this morning?
One of the things that when Dinah was born, of course, that was my first one, and I thought she was so precious, and I didn't want to get a bit of dirt on her, not a speck. And I would just bathe her incessantly and just change her clothes at the least little things. My mother said she thought I'd put her in a washing machine if I could get by with it. Anyway, then I knew that, you know, now then I realized that was not really good. And especially when her brother came along, I found out pretty quick that you can't keep two of them like that. And so then later I realized that I was so obsessive with keeping my house clean all the time. I was raised that way. My mother always had us doing those things, and so I was just passionate alone. And now then I know that's not near as important as spending time with your children. I worked a lot with my children in Bible class and in vacation Bible school and things, but I needed to give them more time at home in the Word, and which now I wish I had of.
Well, how did God play a role in your mothering during the years?
Well, I got all of my, really, I was raised, you know, for the valueship of the Bible, and so I passed it along to my children. I don't see how anybody can raise a child with not reading their Bible and learning what God wanted us to be like. I think that's really important, because that way you're taught honesty, respect, and to be trustworthy, and all of those things. But that's what really played a big part, was the church role and God in my life.
You know, for those people who know you, they know that you are very close. And I don't think any parent, when they're holding their baby, thinks to themselves, you know, in 50, 60 years, I hope that we're not speaking to one another. I hope that we hate each other. I hope that we're just out of each other's life. I think deep down in every parent's heart, and, you know, kids today, I think deep down in your heart, that at the end of life, what you and I really want is we want a very close relationship with our parents and until they take their last breath. And you guys have had that. And I think as we just kind of maybe bring this session to a close, how have you guys cultivated such a close relationship? I mean, I've spent some time this week with these ladies, and it is just fun. I mean, we laugh for 2 hours in prepping for this, and I can tell these guys just are close. And how have you cultivated that relationship over the years?
Well, I think you start out when they're small, listening to them, really listening. I think everybody wants to be listened to at times. And then if I overstep my boundaries, I would apologize to them about things. And as I grew older, it was hard sometimes to realize, hey, they're adults now. I've got to kind of let go and quit trying to tell them what to do. And so that was one of the things that was hard for me to stop and realize. And I think that's really important, that you have to adjust to the fact that your children are grown and they have to make their own mistakes. We're there for them always.
That's good. Diana, how about you?
Well, to forgive each other. We've forgiven each other when we've hurt each other in any way. We learn to forgive. We honor each other's feelings. It's really important. And we're always been there for each other during a crisis. And we always laugh a lot together. We have a lot of good time. When we go to Texas, we laugh all the way down there and all the way back. We have some funny things that a lot of people don't think that happened to us, and we get so tickled about it. We just have a really good time.
Does Mom still give you advice?
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's great.
She's always giving me encouragement. She always tells me, you know, that I can do anything I want to. And then she listens to me and she helps me. If I have any problems with my marriage, she helps me to look at the situation. And one time she told me, she said, well, think about it this way. If you bake that pie for your husband, then maybe he'll have a better attitude. And I baked it, and he did. So.
Yeah. And I went home and told my wife that one last night. So. Yeah. Well, hey, let's give these sweet young ladies a hand for joining us. Thank you. Thanks. You know,
You know, moms, you guys just have a way of saying the right thing at the right time. And the reality is that your kids are always looking at you, and they're picking things up that they know that down the road in life that they just want to be like you with. Listen to Steve Sings. All right, men, here's what I want you to do. I want you to stand up, men. Just the men. And let's just give it up for all the ladies in here today, huh? Woo! Moms, God bless you, and have a great day. Thanks for coming.